my body just went into shock. Like that traumatic reaction, I went numb from starting at my toes all the way up to my head. I was able to keep moving somehow. I don't know how, but I think that also saved me. I yelled like really, really loud twice or once, and I blew my whistle twice. And I think that with the combination of a waist lamp and a headlamp, the cougar decided to not attack. But my body was actually prepared for it to jump on me.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hey, welcome back. My guest this week is Shannon Mick. She's an ultramarathon runner who she got into running while she was dating the man that she eventually married. She thought that running was stupid. She thought they should probably be hanging out together, not him going off and running. But he convinced her to do a 5K race. And as you probably know, the 5K race is the gateway entrance into distance running for a lot of people. Now she's an ultramarathon runner. She has two unsupported FKTs to her credit. FKT, if you don't know, is a fastest known time. It's the Girard Hiking Trail and one called To Hell and Back, the North Country Trail in Pennsylvania. We'll get to her conversation in a minute. But first of all, I want to thank Exoskin for sponsoring this episode. Exoskin makes high-performance apparel for those of us who like to go out and test our limits. They got you covered from hats and skull caps to socks and everything in between. They have a patented rapid-dry copper material that pulls the moisture away from your body. They say that Exoskin provides comfort regardless of the conditions, and I can say I tested this statement on Saturday. I ran the Hawk 100. Well, I didn't finish. The Hawk 100 was extremely brutally hot this year. 47 people started, only 12 people finished. And even though I was soaked with sweat, soaking wet, I had no chafing, and I had no body lube, which if you've ever run it in wet clothes, you know the kind of chafing you get and how painful it is and how sometimes you have to just, even if you're lubed up, you get those cramps, you get those spots where your clothes are rubbing you raw in those tender areas. Well, I was dealing with cramps and trying to regulate my pace to keep from overheating, but it was nice not to have those clothes rubbing on my tender spots. The Exoskin performed fantastically. And even though my performance didn't allow me to finish, I was glad that I was wearing Exoskin. I'll be back next year to give another try at the Hawk 100, and I'm sure I'll be wearing Exoskin because it performed exceptionally. Exoskin is 100% made in the USA. Every product is backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you wear it for 30 days and you're not satisfied, you get a full refund. Check out all Exoskin has to offer at the website exoskin.us. Use the promo code ULTRAMINDSET, that's ULTRAMINDSET, at checkout for a great discount. So I have had several guests in the past episodes. They have had FKTs. Each of those runners that had FKTs had some sort of support along the way. Shannon Mick has two unsupported FKTs. And I found out from talking to her that unsupported means not only do you carry everything with you, no food or water dropped off along the trail, nobody handing you a bar or anything, and no contact with anyone by phone, not even to let them know that you're still alive. So you can't even text to say, hey, I'm still out here, don't worry. And in her FKT to Hell and Back, Shannon had real doubts about whether she was going to make it back alive. It was a fun story, great conversation. So here is Shannon Mick. Thank you for coming on the show, Shannon, and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Eric. It's awesome to be here.
Yeah. I can't remember how I ran across your profile. I saw you online that you had done an FKT attempt. So that's kind of one of the things I wanted to talk about. But I think you've got a lot more to say than that. But what I usually start out with is to ask to introduce yourself to the audience and tell, how did you get started as a runner?
Yeah, so I'm Shannon Mick, and I'm an ultra marathon runner. I'm also a national certified counselor and licensed professional counselor. I specialize in treating anxiety and providing that treatment through telemental health. And yeah, I got into, yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
so like telemental health is like Zoom. So were you doing like the online consulting before everything got shut down, or was that something that you did like when COVID came?
I just went into business for myself whenever COVID came. So it was kind of just at the same time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you had the idea first, and then everybody else kind of jumped on board and, mm-hmm. and says, we're going to live on Zoom for now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, cool. So you're helping people with anxiety, depression, and mental health issues. So. Mm-hmm. That's cool. What did you notice? Like, I know that I'd heard in the news that there were, you know, that a lot of people with the shutdowns, there was more call for people needing that service. Was that something that you noticed?
I think there was kind of a shift in it where, yeah, we were needed much more by people. I think people really realized the importance of their mental health, and that's kind of where it came from. And anxiety was just a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. So how did you get started running?
Yeah, my husband, when we were dating, maybe it was like 2011 or something like that. He got me, that was about right. He got me into running, and he was a marathoner at the time and not a trail runner, not an ultra runner. And so I would get upset with him about going out on runs. And to me, running was just stupid, you know, like, why would you go out and like do something for half an hour or an hour when we could hang out, you know, mm-hmm. you want to have as much time with the person that you love as possible. Like, I don't understand this stupid running thing. So then he got me into doing a 5K, and I hated that 5K with all my heart, and it was the most embarrassing thing in the world. I finished second to last in a lot of pain, mm-hmm. and I thought he was going to have to take me to the hospital.
Did you train before? I mean, did you do like training runs, or did you just go out and run 3 miles?
I did some training runs in probably the most stupidest way like possible, because I was wearing the Vibram Five Fingers at the time.
Okay. So I guess that's usually that's not what people start running in. So what was your motivation to start in the Vibram Five Fingers?
I thought they were really cool looking, and I was all into that barefoot, minimal, and I can't remember if we read Born to Run at that time or not, but that's kind of just fueled the fire.
So, but you were using them more for walking, not necessarily running.
I was using them for running.
Oh, okay.
Like an idiot.
So did you go out and buy them specifically for your run?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Basically. Yeah, okay. I had 2 pairs, and I rotated between the pairs.
Wow.
Yeah.
So did you like? I'm just thinking about the way most people run. Did you change the way that you ran because of wearing Vibrams, or did you kind of run like normal and landing on your heel?
No, I've always ran like towards the front of the foot anyways.
Okay.
Yeah, I have really tight calf muscles. So that's just kind of the way my foot strikes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Because I know a lot of people, when they transition to a minimal shoe, there's issues with having to change their gait. Mm-hmm. So the 5K, you said you hurt. So it wasn't necessarily mm-hmm. your feet. It was the rest of your body?
Yeah, I went out too fast, you know, thinking I could win it, right? And I had like just really bad like that side stitch going on mm-hmm. to the point where I was swearing and I was struggling to breathe.
Okay. So were you like in the front of the pack for part of the race anyway?
I was probably in the front of the pack for the first 5 seconds.
Okay. But you kind of, you're an ultra runner now. So what was after your 5K and your husband were you married at the time?
No, I think we were engaged.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, I mean, we dated for like a year and we're engaged for about a year and then we got married. So yeah, we're coming up on 10 years.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks. Yep. So ultra marathon running came about 2015 after I got injured from the Vibram Five Fingers. So yeah, I had a stress fracture in my right foot, a metatarsal. And then, you know, once I got recovered from that, I went into half marathon road and marathon road. And I hated a lot about marathon road. And I switched from that to doing a trail half marathon, then a trail marathon, and then JFK 50 miler in 2016.
Okay. So what was your motivation then to keep running? I mean, after the 5K, you didn't quit. What was your decision to not stop?
It kind of came out of just pure embarrassment.
Yeah. So you decided you wanted to get better. Mm-hmm. You didn't want to finish second to last.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was so embarrassing. It's like, you can do better than that. It's just stupid running.
So do you feel like you're kind of a little bit competitive then?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm competitive. And then, you know, when I got into ultra running, the JFK 50 milers in the fall, then the next spring, my husband, who's also somewhat competitive, he's like, oh, I'm going to do a 50 miler. So,
so you did it first.
I did it first. And then he took the leap that spring and did a 50 miler.
So did you like compare times or that kind of competition, or just you had to cover the distance?
I think at first we kind of just like, you have to cover the distance. And we ran, I think, that first one together and one or two other 50 milers we ran together.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where did you go after that? Continue to try to go farther, or was 50 miles kind of where you said, oh, that's good enough?
I was very motivated to go further. So like 50 miles, I did a handful of them. And then I decided that I was going to start doing like training for a 100 miler, but I needed to do 100K first, you know, which I don't even remember the order that happened in. I might have tried the 100 miler first. And I have two attempts at Oil Creek 100. And I have DNF on both of those. It takes people like, you know, a handful of tries to finish that. I know people have tried to finish it seven times.
Wow.
So it's a pretty tough one. And it took my husband his third attempt to finish it. And so, like I said, I have two DNFs, just missing the cutoff time. The first in, what was it, 2017, I missed the cutoff time at mile 76 or something like that. And then in 2018, I missed the cutoff at 85.
That's tough.
Yeah.
So you said it was, what was the name of the race again?
Oil Creek 100.
Oil Creek 100. Where's that at?
Yeah. So that's, it's north of me. So I live in Zelenople, about 40 minutes north of Pittsburgh. And then Oil Creek is probably about an hour north of where I'm at.
Okay. So the Appalachian Mountains, is it?
I'm trying
to think where Pennsylvania was. Was it a lot of hills?
Yes, lots and lots of hills. Yeah, the race has just under 18,000 feet of elevation gain.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lot of hills.
And I can see. And so, what kind of time do they give you to finish?
I think it's at 32 for Oil Creek. I'd have to look that one up to be sure.
That's a pretty tight cutoff if you've got that kind of elevation.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of, I know some races, I mean, 32 hours is kind of, you know, an average time for a lot of hundreds. Mm-hmm. But I know some of them will give more if they're, you know, if the course is tougher.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with some friend of mine ran one that was a 40 hour cutoff, and it was a pretty tough course. So they gave you extra time.
Yeah. So Oil Creek 100, at one point it was a ticket race for, you know, the lottery for Western States 100.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's, so then, did you then go on and complete one, or are you still kind of working on getting 100 miles under your belt?
I'm still working on it. I haven't given up on Oil Creek. So that's this October. I'll be doing it again. So.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay.
Yeah. 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 Still no 100 miler yet.
Well, that's 100 miles is nothing to sneeze at. And especially if you've got a tough course, I mean, that can take, it just takes a lot. So what would you do differently? I mean, you had two attempts. What is kind of your outlook to do differently this time?
Well, my first thing was actually hiring a running coach. So I did that to get faster and, just kind of become more nimble and aware of where I'm placing my foot on the trail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like running drills and things like that, you know, will help out with nimbleness and quick turnover. So as far as like things to improve upon, I mean, I feel like the first two attempts I had, besides just getting really, really, really tired, I had a lot of like little things go wrong. Like trekking pole decided to break, so it wouldn't get put together when it mm-hmm. was collapsed. So I spent about 10 minutes at an aid station having a volunteer try to do that. Other issues was like headlamp not working, backup headlamp not working. taking forever to try to, you know, switch batteries and stuff in the dark. And mm-hmm. Storms, it stormed for hours, in 2018. So the trail was basically just all mud at one point, and it was pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, and with that kind of elevation, that would be difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. I was exhausted. I wore myself out. I think this year, my biggest concern is going to be just staying awake. That was something I really struggled with the last two attempts. And I was eating coffee beans, you know, caffeine, gels, like all this different stuff. And I was just exhausted.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the moving didn't keep you awake? I mean, the if you kept moving?
Mm-mm. Well, I was kind of just falling asleep on my feet. You know, and we can still move and make ground doing that. But when you're going uphill for a long time at a very snail-like pace, mm-hmm. it is just so hard to stay awake.
Well, I've heard stories of some people actually falling asleep and they kept on running. They were actually asleep. Yes. So it sounds like that kind of happened. You were almost at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I kept saying to my pacer, Josh, in 2018, I was like, I know I've been here before. I know I've done this. It's like, I have no idea where I'm at. And I think I just babbled like that for a while.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, and the things you say to your pacers in the middle of the night, sometimes, I mean, they just need to learn how to ignore you because sometimes you don't make sense.
Right, yeah.
So was it one or two FKT that you've done?
Yeah, I have two FKTs, and the cool thing about the one I recently did just back in June, I actually got two within. I killed two birds with one stone. So because I did an out and back, mm-hmm. When I went out, I got that FKT. And then when I came back, I got that FKT.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. So it was, so the FKT wasn't for, it was for two different directions. It wasn't for the total trip.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Yeah. And you had, and you did that self-supported, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, unsupported.
Oh, unsupported.
Mm-hmm.
So now remind me, what does unsupported? Because there's like self-supported, there's supported, self-supported, and unsupported. What does the unsupported mean?
Yeah, so unsupported is that I carried all of my gear on me. I think the difference between unsupported and self-supported is self-supported is probably like you drop something off on the trail ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm guessing. I don't remember the official rules, but okay. Yeah, I carried everything with me the entire trip.
So water and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Water and food. So how much was that? I mean, I'm thinking how much water, and it was, the total was like 50 some miles, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think it was 52. I thought it was 50, but whenever I did it, it was 52. And I'm like, ugh. Yeah.
So how much water did you have to start off with? Or did you like have a life straw and get water out of the stream?
Yeah. What I did was I started out with about 2 liters on my back. And of course, a bunch of food in my pack. I used the Ultimate Direction vest and okay. a platypus bladder. So I had, you know, 2 liters of water and then a bunch of food just stashed everywhere and real food. I think if I would change things, it would be liquid calories and kind of go with that plan the next time, because the food ended up just being more weight and more food than I needed, but I wanted to be prepared mm-hmm. for basically anything. Cause I knew that even if something happened, I wasn't going to quit and I would be out there for an unknown amount of time. But so for water, you know, I planned it out. I had to go from Jennings Environmental Center, which is on one end of Moraine State Park, and then run through that park and then the next park, which is McConnell's Mill State Park. And at the end of that park is Hell's Hollow. So my run was called To Hell and Back.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I had, you know, 2 liters of water to get me to the most accessible water source, which is the Slippery Rock Gorge Creek in McConnell's Mill. So that was probably about half of is it 15-ish or so miles, something like that, 15 or 17 miles, I could get more water.
Okay.
And yeah, I purchased a, what's it called? It's a very nice water filter, and you fill it up, the BeFree. I can't think of the official name for it, but the BeFree water filter.
Mm-hmm.
It's this little, like water bottle, and you can roll it up, but you scoop the water up and then you put the filter and the lid on it. And then you can literally just drink straight from that, or you can, you know, dump it into a bladder.
Okay.
Yeah. So I ended up stopping probably 4 or 5 times to refill that. So it was somewhat of a warm day. I think it was in the upper 70s.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and probably quite a bit of humidity, I'd imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty humid here.
Well, depending on where you live, there's been a lot of rain where I live, and it's just it's been an extremely humid year because we've had higher than normal rainfall. But mm-hmm. But yeah, and folks in Florida always just laugh and goes like, it's humid all the time. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
So you made the FKT both ways.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How did it feel? I mean, you were by yourself, like out in the wilderness. How did you feel?
I had to be, honestly, I like going out and being by myself like that and for a long period of time. But 50 miles, you know, by yourself with, you can't text or message anybody at all, you know.
Oh, really?
That's the rules.
That's part of the rules. I did not know that.
Yeah, you can't even like text somebody and be like, hey, I'm okay. You know, you have to just go out there and be out there. So
I'd never heard that one before. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, right. Because yeah, then it's not considered unsupported anymore if that's what you're going for.
So emotional support counts as part of the whole deal, huh?
Right. Yeah. Yep. So I mean, you're truly out there by yourself unless you come across a hiker or somebody and they wave hello to you.
Yeah, and they can't share food with you. So
right. Yeah, you can't take anything from them.
Can't take anything from anybody.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a long time to just be by yourself, and I didn't have music or anything. You know, just kept it simple. I wanted to have my phone charged in case of an emergency, even though I had 2 battery packs with me. You know, just playing it very safe, and wanted to be able to hear what was going on around me and things like that. So yeah, 50 miles, and it ended up being over 16 hours. So okay. That's longer than what it would normally take me to do a 50 miler.
Was it because of the weight on your back, or?
It was probably because of the weight on my back.
Well, and stopping to fill water is, I mean, that's not quite like just popping into an aid station and having somebody else fill your bladder for you.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yep. And so, you know, speaking of safety, I guess I'll mention the scariest thing of all, which I guess it was pretty cool that I had this experience, but at mile 49, the last thing I needed, and I'm really glad I wasn't running at that time. I was at a hiking pace and it was kind of a little uphill, but, I had a cougar. Like I didn't know it was there until mm-hmm. it growled at me directly to my left. And it was just out of the range of my light source.
Okay. So yeah. Like you couldn't, did the eyes light up at all or?
No, like I didn't see it at all, but it was literally right there and it was not happy. And I had never been so scared in my life. Like you're tired and it's dark and quiet and you're just like, oh, I got 3 miles to go and then I'm done, you know, and then you get to be like all happy and proud of yourself. But here I am. I just faced a life or death, you know, situation, and my body just went into shock. Like that traumatic reaction. I went numb from starting at my toes all the way up to my head.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. My body.
Were you kind of like frozen in place then?
I was able to keep moving somehow. I don't know how, but I think that also saved me. I yelled like really, really loud, twice or once, and I blew my whistle twice. And I think that with the combination of a waist lamp and a headlamp decided the cougar decided to not attack, but my body was actually prepared for it to jump on me.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And, then I was just terrified the entire rest of the way. And I was afraid to run after that. So I ended up hiking a good bit of it in. So like, you know, 3 miles of just hiking, and you don't know if it's stalking you.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you don't want it to like, you know, get triggered like, oh, it's prey. You know, if you see, I'm like 4'11" and I look like a little snack out there. The last thing I need is this cougar.
Right. Well, I have heard, read a study, and they said that that cougars don't like the sound of the human voice, and however they did the study was, you know, cougars when they kill an animal, they'll leave it, they'll come back, you know, basically they won't eat it all at once, they'll come back, and they put radios up over a cougar kill after the cougar had gone, and they were tracking the cougars, and cougars came and heard the sound and wouldn't come even to their previous kill. And so that supposedly, you know, yelling or talking, speaking is a good way to have them not come after you. So
that was, you know, one thing I was glad I was prepared for, although, you know, as a Pennsylvania resident, we were told that we didn't have, you know, mountain lions anymore. They all went out west, but they're apparently coming back. And so I got to experience that joy. But I turned, like you were saying about the voice, I turned on the satellite radio. So I was playing like heavy rock music on my phone. And I was saying like positive affirmations and like just praying for vehicles to like come by, because there was a road probably about 50 to 100 yards to my left. And I thought, okay, well, any car that comes by, maybe that would deter it from, you know, like following me or whatever. But yeah. Oh, it was terrible.
Yes. Well, and I've thought of that several times, because I think, you know, I live in Kansas, and I think the official policy is we don't have cougars in Kansas either. But there have been sightings, and I talked to a guy who said the one that they saw, the one that was seen in my area, they've nicknamed her Mrs. Robinson. And I talked to a guy who saw this cougar, and I don't know whether it's male or female. I don't know. That's just the name they gave the cougar. But it wasn't like, oh, it was somebody that I didn't. I mean, he said he was like 50 yards away and saw it on the trail, sat and looked at him, and then ran into the woods. So, so I know that, yeah, that they can be around. But I've thought about that several times out at night when I'm out there by myself, and just have to be aware of what's going on. So I was singing and talking out loud as well. So,
Yeah. It's so important to have the bear bell. And I did not have the bear bell because I was like, I'm going to do this awesome and I'm going to finish it before it gets dark. That did not happen.
Well, at least you were prepared enough to have a light.
Had two lights. Yeah, I was well prepared besides the bear bell.
And I was looking at you. You said had done some stuff on YouTube that you had a friend that recently ran the Badwater, and you went out and crewed. What was that experience like?
That was one of the most incredible things I've done in my life. So if you've ever been out to Death Valley, that's one thing. Like, Death Valley is just gorgeous. It's such a unique place to go. And to get out there and experience Death Valley for a few days, like, and I'm saying, like, just in and out of a car, you're basically out in Death Valley for 2 days straight. So that was a huge blessing to be able to be out there and be in that moment. And with people who enjoy ultra running, you know, just as much as you do, and to work together to get somebody across a finish line of the world's toughest foot race, it's like, you know, nothing until you go out and do it, nothing really describes it.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures, and they run it on the roads, if I remember right. It's all on asphalt. But it's from the bottom of Death Valley to Mount Whitney?
Yeah, the Mount Whitney portal. Yeah. It starts so the Badwater Basin where the race starts at is the lowest point in the United States.
Okay, 200 and some feet below sea level, if I remember right.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So you were in the car supporting a runner.
In and out of a car. I got to run about 30 miles with her, which was pretty cool.
Wow. So did you run in the daytime or the nighttime?
It was a mix. So there were four of us crewing her, and that's the maximum number allowed. You know, two of them were already veterans of the, you know, finished the Badwater 135, and our crew chief, it was his 10th time, you know, crewing the race, which was so awesome. And then I was the rookie.
So what were the things that you had to do to help keep your friend going?
So whenever we were like a well-tuned machine, you know, by the time she was, say, like 5 miles into the race, we had a system and we knew when we needed to do what and everything. And so she would tell us if she needed scratch or more water or spray, ice bandana, like all of, you know, pretty much anything, what she wanted, like if she wanted a gel or solid food. So then we would get that for her out of the back of our vehicle. And at a certain point of the race, one of us was allowed to run with her. Okay. So the person, you know, running with her much later on in the race, then they would carry that stuff, you know, with them. So, you know, say I would carry like a wet towel and the spray bottle and her water bottle and my water bottle. And we would, you know, like a bag of potato chips or something. You're the Sherpa.
So Badwater allowed the Pacers to carry stuff for the runners. I know a lot of races, they don't, the rules say that you have to carry whatever your pacer is not supposed to be able to, you know, not supposed to give you stuff.
We have different rules, but we still have a whole list of rules that we have to follow.
What, for bad water?
Mm-hmm, for bad water, yeah.
So what were the rules you had to follow?
So, you know, basically a lot of parking rules, you know, places where we could and could not park. Mm-hmm. We had to park very specific, all the way off the road to the right of the white line. You weren't supposed to get out of the like driver's side at all. You know, you had to get out the left side or the right side of the vehicle.
Okay.
Turn off your headlights and have your four-way blinkers on. Now, of course, we were required to wear a class 3 reflective vest and have a blinky light on the front of us and a blinky light on the back of us.
Okay.
And that during specific hours. And then for pacers, we had to be behind and to the left of the runner, basically, to take care of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the did the runners run? I mean, if I remember right, there was not a lot of road past the white line. Did the runners have to run then in the lane of where the traffic was?
We tried to keep them, you know, on the white line, basically, or, you know, just to the left of it. But I mean, a lot of times we'd watch out for traffic for them and things like that. Just make sure they're staying safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a regular highway, right? It's like mm-hmm. cars don't really necessarily have to slow down.
Yeah, no, cars don't have to slow down. So yeah, you're basically just out there and, taking care of each other, but you know, the police and the national park and, you know, all of the different, you know, people and pieces come together and they help patrol and protect us as well.
Mm-hmm. So your friend, did she finish?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she finished. Yep. Just in time. Yeah.
Just under the cutoff?
Yeah, she had probably about an hour or so.
Okay. Now, yeah. if I remember right, the there's a cutoff at like 50 miles that is the cutoff at 50 miles is more stiff than the total cutoff. If I read right, is that so? What was the cutoff time for 50 miles?
That's a good question. I don't really remember.
I can't remember. It was because I remember reading it and thinking, wow, you've really got to do quite a bit for that first 50. And that's when you're down in the bottom of the desert too.
Right. Yeah. It was a really rough year for people to try to get to that 50 mile mark because the weather was pretty bad at the beginning of the race. We had a desert storm come in. I forget the official like term for that, but it was basically a big dust storm and it was really, really windy. I think wind gusts were 20 or 40 miles per hour, someone was saying.
Hmm.
And it was pretty hot. It was 100 degrees that first night. And yeah, with the wind. So it was basically like just being in a dryer. and then I guess it was a little bit humid. People were really struggling with the humidity.
And which is unusual for the desert.
Right. Yeah. Even though it was like 5 or 7% humidity, it's still, you know, all the people who are used to running out in the desert, you know, that kind of threw their body for a loop. But, you know, my crew and our runner, we were all from the East Coast and we were like, oh, that's, you know, we didn't even notice it.
Yeah. Well, and 100 degrees with a fairly low humidity isn't really all that bad for, I mean, especially for, you know, if you're used to running in the humidity, cause the, you know, the heat index. So where in, you know, where you're at, do they, you know, what does the heat index get to like in the summer?
Where I live at, we get to maybe like 90 or 91.
Okay.
You know,
for the heat index or for the real temperature?
Oh, the real temperature.
Okay. So yeah. add the humidity on that and you have a heat index of, you know, 105 or so. And so, yeah, that's, that can be brutal. They say that's what it's supposed to feel like.
Yeah.
So you've got your 100 mile coming up. Do you have plans for anything after that? You have any plans for next year's running?
Nothing set in stone. I always have a list of races and things that I want to do. And, it's really hard to say what next year is going to bring us, since the pandemic. So I'm hesitant to register for anything just because I registered for like 5 or 6 things and had them all canceled.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
did they just cancel outright or did they defer?
Mostly canceled outright, and Oil Creek was deferred. So it was just kind of, yeah.
Yeah. And I'd heard that it was a lot of the races in the middle of the country that I knew about, they offered deferments. And so, the race that I'm running is part of a deferment from last year. And so, and then I've got another one coming up in January that both of those got deferred. So yeah, I understand how that would be hesitant. So what is your, if you've got a bucket list race that you really, really think you'd love to do someday that, out in the future, what you got one that's like, oh, wow, I really would like to do that.
Yeah. Badwater 135 is my first goal, after I get a number of 100 milers, which I have a list of 100 milers that I really want to go out and do. But I think, beyond Badwater, it would have to be probably Tahoe 200.
Okay.
Yeah. Go out there and see that.
Yeah. I've seen some of the pictures and heard reports of people who've done that. And that sounds like it would be a fun race.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. And I want to see all those views,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So with the Tahoe 200, when you were talking about feeling like you needed to go to sleep, did you ever get hallucinations in the middle of the night? Because I know, when you get into the 200 mile races, a lot of people will get hallucinations. Did you ever experience that?
So not doing 100 mile races, I got hallucinations actually. Last year was my only race, in-person race was Laurel Highlands Ultra. I ended up being able to get in on that, that was my only 2020 race, that was in person. And I had hallucinations around mile 50 of that, because I had pushed myself so hard. I got injured very early in the race, like around mile 5 or 7 or something like that. And I continued on until I missed the cutoff time, around mile 50, or I had 13 miles left in the race when I missed the cutoff time. But I remember around mile 40, I started having like really freaky hallucinations. And I was by myself. We didn't have pacers or, cause it was 2020. Mm-hmm. I'm out there and, my light lit up, it was so scary. It was to the left and like kind of like directly to my left. Like I'm going that way. And it was this like apparition ghost, lady. She was wearing like a very old time garb, like a big rimmed hat, and it was tilted slightly over her face, so you could only see half of her face, but her face was old and wrinkly, and you could only see like half of her face, and then like this long lacy sort of looking dress with long flowing sleeves and a long skirt, and then like some stripes at the bottom of the skirt. And that stopped me from even dead in my tracks. And I had to play with this thought, all right, do I keep going forward or do I turn around and go back to the last runner I passed? And I thought to myself, oh, if I go back to the last runner, she's going to get me by the time I get there. And I thought, if I go forward, she's going to get me. And then like I saw her like coming at my face and just in my imagination. So I was like, okay, well, you just got to suck it up and you have to go past her. And like, this probably isn't real. You have to just keep going. So as I was approaching her, like just very cautiously and slowly, had my light pointed like on her. And then I saw it was a stupid tree stump. And part of the shadow and the lace and stripes was from ferns. I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah, I've heard people who have, you know, have hallucinations that usually there's some object that your mind turns into.
Yeah.
But for you, it turned into extremely detailed vision.
Extremely detailed. Yeah. And then not further down the trail, there was same thing happened. And it was a clown coming up out of the ground. And I told myself, I'm like, it's probably just a tree stump. Like, get close to the clown. Let's see. Thank God it was a tree stump. But it looked like its hands were coming up like, I'm going to grab you. And then once I got past that, then it was like I was hearing things. Uh-huh. So I was hearing a phone ringing. I kept looking around left, right. Where's this phone coming from? I was like, am I near an aid station? No, I'm not. Like thinking I'm seeing lights, like headlamps out on the trail. I'm like, no, you're not even seeing anything at all. And I thought maybe it was my Garmin Inreach's battery dying because my husband was crewing me and we could only have one crew person. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, maybe it's dying because, you know, that Garmin Inreach is just such a terrible thing. It's such a waste of money.
To help locate you if you have trouble. An emergency beacon type thing.
Yeah. It's pretty much, it dies every time we take it out.
So does it have a rechargeable battery or?
You plug it in, to recharge it.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just such a, that thing. Anyway, so it could have been that, you know, but I never quite figured out, like, the Garmin Inreach doesn't sound like what I was hearing. And then the worst thing was after I was hearing the phone, then I was hearing, I have a little one. So I was hearing her babble. And I was like, oh, I'm hearing my daughter, you know, and it's kind of, oh man, it just messes with you so much.
So what did you do to, I mean, what were the kinds of things you told yourself when you were dealing with that?
I kept telling myself, you know, make it to the next aid station. You'll see people, you know, you'll see your husband, you'll get crewed, and then you only have 13 miles left. And I mean, I was in so much pain because I was injured. I rolled my ankle severely. It took me about 6 months to recover from it.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I was really in no shape to be doing the last 13. But if I made the aid station cutoff, I would have kept going to just finish because I told myself, after doing the first three hills of the race, which were very tough, that if I finish, I would never do Laurel Highlands ever again. So I still had that mindset that if I finished, I would never do Laurel Highlands ever again. Now that's going to be on my list next year. Uh-huh.
That's interesting. It's because if you had the injury at, a guy that is part of my running group, he finished a 100-mile race with a stress fracture, and it ended up in a boot, and his words to himself was, you know, I think it was, he was, did it at mile 60. And so he went 40 miles. He said, I may never run 100 miles again. I'm going to finish. And so that, yeah, that kind of, this is my, this is, I'm not doing this ever again is a motivation to get you through the pain, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, very. And, as far as distraction, oh, I sang 99 bottles of beer on the wall like 3 times.
Oh, wow. All the way through?
All the way through. Yeah.
Well, that's so that, I was pacing somebody and we were singing Father Abraham and just between the two of us until we started going up hills. And then we weren't able to sing. We had to breathe. So were you able to keep singing even up the hills?
Yes. Yeah. You know what? Hills were the only thing that wasn't hurting my ankle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you could climb. Okay. But,
Everything else was bad. Fine.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's tough. Rolling your ankle is that. And then you can kind of keep going and think it's okay. But
my ankle made like a terrible popping, tearing kind of sound. So basically everything I stepped on, it kind of just rolled or made another noise.
Noise the whole time you were running?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, like I when there were rocks, which Laurel Highlands is pretty technical with all of the rocks. If there were rocks, I had to slow way down and just pay attention to where I was putting my feet, which is why I was so exhausted by the time I got to mile 40.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I will be watching for your race reports on how you do with the oil.
Yeah. Oil Creek.
Oil Creek. Yeah. Hopefully that goes well for you and you can get that, 100 miles. And going 84, you've gotten past, you know, kind of the point where, you know, that once you get to 85 miles, you're kind of, you know, all of the things that your body's going to tell you and the mental struggle, getting that last 15 is, I mean, you still have to struggle, but you use the same tools to finish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, if people want to follow you on social media or reach out to you, how is the best way for them to contact you?
Yeah. So on Instagram, I'm b.short.run.ultra. So B Short Run Ultra. On Twitter, I'm at b_short. And, my website is Be Short Run Ultra.
Okay.
So, okay. Yeah.
And then you're on YouTube as well.
Oh yeah. YouTube. Yep. So Shannon Be Short Run Ultra.
Shannon Be Short Run Ultra. Okay. I'll have all of those links in the show notes as well. So,
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Thank you. Thank you a lot. And good luck with your run in October. And look forward to seeing good success, hoping good success for you.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. Good luck at your races.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. Now, I know you may have just picked up your phone to hit stop, so I want to ask for just a minute before you do. I am trying something new. I would like to hear your stories about running. And it's any topic. You can choose your most interesting story. But to get started, I have a couple of suggestions. We've been collecting poop stories. Where's the weirdest place you've had to poop on a run? I know we've all had those weird places and had to get creative. Another idea is, what is the strangest thing you've found? If you're a trail runner, what is the strangest thing you've found on the trail? If you're a road runner, what's the strangest thing you've found on the road when you're out for a run? Send in your stories. I have a comment site. If you go to ultramindsetpodcast.run, it is the show notes are there for this episode and others. Also, you can find all of the episodes there. But at the top of the page, there is something labeled comments, questions, and stories. It's for comments, questions, and stories. There's a link there that will let you record your running story. So I want to collect these stories and play them at the end. So so if you decide to skip through these announcements, you can skip through and find some entertaining stories kind of at the end, just as a fun thing to do. If you did enjoy this episode and you know somebody who might like it as well, take just a minute, send them a link. Appreciate that. It helps us to find new people who might enjoy what we have to offer here. Also, I'd like to remind you that an ultra mindset is about more than just running. So if you're feeling stuck in life and you'd like to see how life coaching might help, I am a life coach, would love to help you. If you feel like you would like to check out what I have to offer as a life coach to help you get unstuck and get you toward the life that you'd like to have, send me a DM on Instagram. I am at Eric Dieter, or you can use the link ultramindsetpodcast.run. There you can leave a voice message. You can also leave a text message there. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.